Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 13, text 18. So 16 and 17 were done yesterday? Okay. Na te sayana sha nirujama yurujamasya. Na te sayana sha nirujamasya. Brahman nuharto yata eva boga. Brahman nuharto yata eva boga. Abogino yam tava vipradeha. Abogino yam tava vipradeha. Piva yatas tadn baruna shaman chet. Piva yatas tad vadana shaman chet. Nate sayanasya nirudhamasya. Brahman nuharto yata eva boga. Abogino yam tava vipradeha. Piva yatas tad vadana shaman chet. Others? Ladies. Na, not, te, of you, sayanasya, lying down, nirujamasya, without activities, Brahman, O saintly person, nu, indeed, ha, it is evident, artha, money, yataha, from which? Eva, indeed. Boga, sense enjoyment. Abogina, of one who is not engaged in sense enjoyment. Ayam, this. Tava, your. Vipra, O learned Brahmana. Deha, body. Piva, fat. Yataha, how is it? Tat, that fact. Vada, kindly tell. Na, us. Shamam, excuse. Chet, if I have asked an impudent question. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. A Brahmana, O Brahmana, fully in knowledge of transcendence, you have nothing to do, and therefore you are lying down. It is also understood that you have no money for sense enjoyment. How then has your body become so fat? Under the circumstances, if you do not consider my question impudent, kindly explain how this has happened. Purport. Generally, those engaged in spiritual advancement take food only once, either in the afternoon or in the evening. If one takes food only once, naturally he does not become fat. The learned sage, however, was quite fat, and therefore Prahlad Maharaj was very much surprised because of being experienced in self-realization. A transcendentalist certainly becomes bright-faced, and one who is advanced in self-realization must be considered to possess the body of a brahmana, because the bright-faced saintly person was lying down and not working, and yet was quite fat. Prahlad Maharaj was puzzled and wanted to question him about this. Om Aginatimanam Dashyajananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gadave Namaha Shuchitanim Nobisdam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So the real thing that's being criticized here is not being fat. Of course, it's not good to be fat. And that's generally a symptom of what happens to somebody when they eat too much. But the real thing that's being criticized here in this text and purport in the previous one is being a sense enjoyer. It says here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did not like his disciples to become very fat in the course of time. He would be very anxious upon seeing his fat. Seeing his fat disciples becoming bogies or enjoyers of the senses. See, that's the real thing that's being criticized here. A devotee should not become a bogey or an enjoyer of the senses. You know, he shouldn't be doing whatever he's doing to get some money so that he can enjoy his senses to his satisfaction. That's the real thing that's being criticized here. And becoming fat is sort of like a byproduct, you know, because generally speaking, that's what happens when you become a sense enjoyer, then you become fat, although that might not always be the case. Some people can eat a lot and they don't get fat, so it's really not, you know, necessarily that's a hard and fast rule. But that's what's being, you know, criticized or condemned here, becoming a sense enjoyer. And the reason is because if you become a sense enjoyer, then you're not going to be able to become Krishna conscious. You know, there's that verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayarparita chetasam vayavasayatma gabudhe samadhanabhidhiyate. That in the minds of those who are too much attached to sense gratification and are bewildered by that, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. In other words, you're not going to be able to get absorbed in thinking about Krishna if you're absorbed in sense gratification, thinking about sense gratification. And we can all practically experience that. The other day I was doing book distribution, and I was at this place. It was a really beautiful setting. I was at the Santa Barbara City College, and there's two sides. That campus is divided into two by a road that goes right through the middle of it, and then there's a bridge across the road. So on one side, it's kind of like congested, a lot of buildings, and it's kind of the campus is on a, you know, sort of like an incline, and it's. But the other side was very pleasant. You just get on the other side of the road there, and it's like the campus is this big lawn, and I just parked myself right on the top of the lawn, and overlooking the lawn, behind the lawn was the ocean. And I got there, and I was thinking, man, this is what a beautiful setting. You know. And it was like not too hot, it was not too cold, there was a nice ocean breeze. And I was just thinking, Bob, this is beautiful. I have to try to do this service really nicely. You know, dovetail this, use this situation in Krishna's service. Let me just try to do this really nicely. Let me try to talk to the people really nicely. It's like almost like an offering to Krishna. And then I just remembered that verse. You know, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pritipurvakam Dadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yena Mamupuyanti Te. That to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. And I was thinking about that the importance of, yeah, you're supposed to do your service bhajatam pritipurvakam, which means with, you know, love and devotion, loving ecstasy, you know, have that mood, you know. So I was thinking, man, let me try to do that. Let me try to really talk to these people really nicely, just, you know, meditating how they're all parts and parcels of Krishna. And we're all part of the same spiritual family. And these are the parts and parcels that have, you know, kind of come here to the material world and Krishna wants them all back. Was that verse 4th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? I can't remember the first two lines, but the second two is Yena Bhutani Yasheshani Draksyas Yatmi Atomai. That Krishna says, so when you've learned the truth, you'll see that all living beings are but part of me, they're in me, they're my, like that. So we're all part of the same spiritual family. That's further confirmed in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. You know, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke, that these living entities are my eternal parts and parcels. You know, we're all part of the same spiritual family. And even in the 15th chapter, there's a very nice verse where I can't remember the Sanskrit. Actually, I don't know the Sanskrit. But Krishna goes how there's two types of living entities. There's the fallible and the infallible. And he says everybody here in this material world is fallible, and everybody in the material world is infallible. See, so, sorry? Yeah, sorry, everybody in the spiritual world is infallible. But that's the jivas. You know, we're all part of, we're Krishna's spiritual offspring. Right? So anyway, you know, trying to meditate like that. Just one point on an interesting note here. There was one video I saw, it was years ago, and I don't know if it was good enough quality so that Nisringananda was able to put it in his collection. But Prabhupada was talking to a, like some sort of social worker or something like that. It was in Australia. So the man was kind of like intelligent, and he was, you know, it was a good conversation. He wasn't like particularly submissive or anything, but he, you know, he asked intelligent questions. Anyway, at one point he asked Prabhupada, so what percentage of the living entities are in the, are here in the material world? And Prabhupada said, 10%. And then he thought about it. He went off, he walked, because he was in a room, you know, he walked a couple steps and he thought, no, actually less than 10%. He said, just like in a prison. You know. So and there's like less than 10% of the jivas. You know, sometimes we're thinking we're in the minority. Oh, we're devotees, we're in the minority. No, actually, the devotees are the mass majority. Over 90% of all the people in existence are devotees. This is the prison, you see. It's not shocking. You shouldn't be shocked if you go to a prison and you find that, well, most of the people here are prisoners. And most of the people here are criminals. Yeah, duh. You know, that's what you should expect to find in a prison. Most people are going to be criminals. But when you get outside, most people aren't criminals. They're, you know, law-abiding citizens. So in the same way, of course, we're in the material world. It seems like, you know, devotees are in a minority. But the reality of the thing is that we're actually in the majority. Over 90% of all the people, you know, souls, jiva soul means people, are devotees. Okay? So anyway, so we're all part of the same spiritual family. You know, Krishna's the supreme spiritual father. And I was thinking, let me do this really nicely. And, you know, talk to these people really nicely, try to attract them to engage in devotional service. And I was thinking, yeah, this is such a nice meditation. How come I haven't been, you know, what could stop a devotee from thinking like this? And then, you know, practically instantaneously, this verse popped into my mind. Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Raja Guna Samud Bhava, Mahasano Mahapapma Vidinam Ihavairinam. That Krishna says to Arjuna, he says, it's lust and lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and is later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. And it's all-devouring in the sense that it devours your spiritual consciousness. The two things are like, they're the antithesis, you know, it's kind of like diametrically opposed. If you ever want to, you know, try to, you know, make an experiment. No, actually, don't make this experiment. But if you're trying to, you know, be in like a devotional consciousness, if you allow like lusty thoughts to enter into your mind, it's like it just destroys it right away. You know, it just destroys it right away. So that's what can destroy it. You know, that's what can put one off that cultivating that mood of bhajatam priti purvakam. But getting back to our, the purport here about the, the overeating and becoming fat. And so, yeah, you can't become a sense enjoyer and expect to make advancement in Krishna consciousness because, it's the opposite consciousness. It's like it's like becoming a sense enjoyer, that's bodily consciousness. So bodily consciousness is going to destroy spiritual or Krishna consciousness. And on this point here, we shouldn't become fanatics. Like Prabhupada's saying here in the purport, generally those in spiritual advancement take food only once a day, in the afternoon and the evening. So it's an important point, but he's saying generally, this is a principle, but it's not the highest principle. In other words, the real principle here is, or the real higher principle is that you got to do what's favorable. you know, in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami explains that in devotional service, you have to accept what's favorable and you have to reject what's unfavorable. Okay? So generally speaking, that's why Prabhupada says, generally, this is favorable for somebody cultivating spiritual life to take food either once, or take food once, either in the afternoon or in the evening. And so if that's your situation too, that's good, then you know you do it. But if that doesn't work, then you got to do something different. The point is, what's more important, the dietary habits have to revolve around the service, you see, not the other way around. It's not like our service should revolve around our dietary like considerations. Like, oh, I only like to eat once a day, and if I only but when I only eat once a day, I don't have much energy, therefore I guess I can't do book distribution because that's a service that requires too much energy, so I don't have that kind of energy if I'm only going to eat once a day, so therefore I'll do some other service. No. That's convoluted thinking. You know? The idea is it's the other way around. Your dietary habits have to revolve around your service. The service is what's important. Oh, Prabhupada really liked it when devotees preach, and I really want to please Prabhupada, but if I'm going to preach all day, I can't just eat once a day. I don't have enough energy, so I don't know. Maybe I got to eat twice a day, three times, or whatever I have to. You know, just have to eat what I need to eat in order to be able to do that service. That's correct thinking. You see, that's how we should be thinking. The diet revolves around the service, not the other way around. You see, And Prabhupada made this point. He was on a morning walk in Denver, and they were, you know, talking about different... Tamalkrishna brought it up then. Some of the temples, they were following these kind of diets with not eating grains and not eating dairy products and not eating this and not eating that. And, you know, practically sometimes they were fasting for like 30 days because some devotees were reading books and then they were, you know, about these health things, benefits, and preaching it to the other devotees. So Tamalkrishna was pointing out this to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was displeased. He wasn't upset. No, they're manufacturing their own way of life. And then, you know, but then one interesting thing came about it. At one point in the conversation, they were, you know, kind of saying, yeah, Prabhupada, you told us we should only fast, you know, we should not fast 2 days in a row. He said that, and then Prabhupada said something. He said, no, actually, fasting is good. And they said, but Prabhupada, but, you know, like fasting. He said, no, fasting is good. If one can fast, that is good. That is austerity. But then he explained what that involves. He said, like Raghunath Das Goswami, he was fasting, and he was, he said he was bathing three times a day and offering hundreds of obeisances. And he didn't mention how many. He was chanting a lot of rounds, too. Prabhupada didn't mention that. But in other words, he was active. You know, Prabhupada said, not this fasting that you fall down flat and you can't do anything. He said, that's markata vairagya. He said, we're not interested in that. You know, the service has to be done. I say, so, you know, it's okay if you could, if you can perform austerity, like reducing eating, reducing sleeping, and if you're able to be functional, that's good. You see, it's okay to be, and it's like being uncomfortable is one thing, and here's the real point. Being uncomfortable is one thing, and being dysfunctional is another thing. Okay? If you can, being uncomfortable is okay in devotional service. You got to, if you can tolerate it. Because if you can tolerate eating a little and sleeping a little, that's good. Because Prabhupada, right in the day one, in the beginning, Prabhupada said, okay, reduce eating and sleeping and, you know, preach Krishna consciousness like that. So if you can function when you're uncomfortable because you haven't eaten really what you'd like to eat and you haven't slept as much as you'd like to sleep, that's good. That's austerity. You get purified. You make advancement doing that. See? But you can't become dysfunctional. If you can't function, that's another story. Then you got to do something else. Then you got to back off. Then you got to, you know, make an adjustment. You got to eat a bit more and you got to sleep more. Because the top priority is you got to be functional. Okay? I'll give an example from my own experience, recent experience. I was up at I went to a music festival back in May in the middle of Washington in a place called The Gorge. It was called Sasquatch. And we were kind of like, we were doing everything 2 weeks prior to that in preparation for being there, you know, driving all the way up to Washington, and we shipped the books up there, and we, you know, had to do so many different things, okay? Worked out the first day of the festival was on a Thursday, and it started out, the cars come rolling in at about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And And when they first roll in, they, you know, they just come in and they park, and then they start get out and set up their tent and this and that. It was one of these camping festivals. It just so happens it was Lord Ramachandra's appearance day. Lord Ramachandra's appearance day is a fast till sunset or moonrise, I forget which. But, you know, which happened at about 7 o'clock. So I was fasting up until that point. And, you know, then we got there. And I thought, okay, you know, oh, I'm okay. I'll give it a go. And so, you know, we parked and the people were parking. We got in early and the people were coming. And so we decided, okay, we filled up our book bags and we went out there. And I went out there to start distributing. And I was like a wet noodle. I mean, you know, I could, it wasn't like I would die, but I couldn't, I realized I can't, I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm not going to be able to pull it off. This is prime time. The people are just getting there. They got all their money. You know, they haven't squandered it yet on this, that, and the other thing. And, they're all excited about being there. This, you know, prime time. That's when a lot of books go out, right at the beginning. So I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I tried. You know, and I stopped. I thought, I can't. Lord Ramachandra's appearance day. I can't break this fast. I got to keep going. So I tried, and I kept, you know, started going again. I drank some more water. But after about, like, you know, two or three attempts and drinking a whole bunch of water, and after 20 minutes, I realized, no, it's not going to work. If I do this, I'm going to do nothing for the next 2 hours because I don't. When you're distributing books, you got to have energy. It's not like you have to have enough energy to pull your body around. You got to be like, you know, relaxed and happy and, you know, right? You got to be able to joke around with the people and, you know, it's like a whole thing. Of course, Krishna's in control. You know, Krishna's the ultimate determining factor, and if he's pleased, you could be half dead and maybe, you know, distribute millions of sets of books. But generally speaking, that's what that service involves. You know, having like physical energy and emotional energy and, you know, you got to be there. You're a salesperson, basically. You know, you're a salesman or a saleswoman. So you got to have that kind of, you know, energy. So I understood. It's not going to work. I'm running the risk. I mean, once again, Krishna's in control. You don't know for sure, but I'm running the risk of really bombing out for these first two, you know, this evening. And, you know, it's like, so I just decided, no, I paid my obeisances. I begged forgiveness of, you know, Prabhupada and Lord Ramachandra. And I said, look, I'm sorry. I can't do this. And I broke the fast. And I also vowed that I'm going to follow it the very first opportunity I get, which I did. You know, the thing went for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Monday, when it was all over, I did the fast that day. But I couldn't do it. See? So, I mean, so the point is, the books went out. I mean, I'm not recommending this to anybody. I hope you never have to break a fast for any reason. But it's kind of like, I felt like I did the right thing. As radical as it is, I felt like I did the right thing because the books went out. And I felt, you know, I ate something. I felt good. I didn't eat grains. I broke the fast with some yogurt or fruit or something like that. And then I just, nuts, whatever it was, you know, just something to give me some energy. And then I went and, you know, everything went well. And the rest of the festival went well. And I didn't feel like I lost the mercy by doing that. I felt like, not like I got the mercy because I did that, but, you know, things went well. So I took that as an indication that, yeah, that Prabhupada thought, well, that was okay. You know, it was unfortunate that I, you know, if I had been practicing more throughout my devotional career, being more austere and tolerating, you know, some devotees are better at it than others. But, that, you know, that was me and that was where I was at and that was what I could do. And I felt like Prabhupada was saying, okay, that's okay. Don't feel bad. Just go ahead, do your service and, you know, just do like, make it up when you can. Which I did. So that was good. So that's the idea that we have to, you know, the service is what's important, and these other things are, you know, need to be there because, you know, it's not like they can be adjusted to facilitate the service. And guidelines are there, and that's like one guideline that's being mentioned here is that generally people in spiritual advancement take food only once in the afternoon and the evening. But we have to remember this is like this is a subordinate principle. And the ordinate principle, you know, the topmost principle is always remember Krishna, never forget him, try to serve him favorably. Do what you have to do to serve Krishna favorably, to serve your spiritual master favorably. That's what's really the most important thing. And I'm going to read you an excerpt from Hari Sari's Transcendental Diary, which vividly, I mean really vividly, illustrates this point. Are you ready? Okay. DJ, come on. Give me a break, will you? You ready? Okay. Okay, so this is in Vrindavan, 1970. I'm not sure, actually. I guess it's 1976. Vrindavan, 1976. So Harikesh Prabhu, he was at that point a sannyasi, I believe. And he was Prabhupada's servant for a while. But Prabhupada wanted him to go priest in Eastern Europe, and he surrendered and he did it. And that's a whole story in and of itself. But then when he was over there, you know, there's a lot of challenges. Eastern Europe was not exactly, preaching in Eastern Europe before communism fell was not a piece of cake. That was like some serious risks there and some serious austerity. You know, like they had the KGB, which is the equivalent of the, I guess, the CIA or something like that here in America. And those guys were mean, you know, really. They were persecuting devotees all over the place. I mean, you know, you were risking your life by preaching Krishna consciousness in Eastern Europe back in 1976, or risking getting in a very, you know, a lot of difficult positions, a lot of difficult situations. And I mean, probably some of you devotees maybe have read that book, Salted Bread. And who here has read that book, Salted Bread? A lot of devotees, so you know what I'm talking about. It's no joke. As Prema Sankirtan says, no joke. So he was, you know, trying to tell Prabhupada about that, you know, the difficulties involved in preaching in Eastern Europe. So this is a little excerpt from the conversation. So it says here, Harikesh Maharaj discussed with Srila Prabhupada some of the practical problems in keeping the Eastern European program going. In the course of their exchange, Prabhupada revealed the radical steps he was prepared to take to ensure that this preaching go on. Here we go. Harikesh began to explain that apart from the risks involved, you know, it's KGB, a big obstacle was a lack of funding. He said that even something as basic as finding something to eat was a major difficulty. Quote, so, if there's nothing else, you can eat meat if you have to, Srila Prabhupada told him matter-of-factly. Harikesh's mouth dropped open. Oh, yeah, let me read it. Harikesh's mouth dropped open a little bit, and his eyes widened, like, you know, everybody can visualize that. Right? And his eyes widened, not knowing if Prabhupada was serious or not. He tried to ignore what he had just heard and continued to say that even if he had money, there was nothing to buy. Completely serious, Prabhupada again told him, quote, so if there is difficulty, you can take meat. Harikesh stopped. He appeared dazed as he contemplated the possible implications. But Prabhupada, what about my consciousness? Damn your consciousness, Prabhupada replied. You must go on preaching. So, there you go. This puts it in the proper perspective, what the highest priority is. You know, Prabhupada was so, preaching was so important. And Harisari is saying here, he said it matter-of-factly, he wasn't joking around. Prabhupada was not being facetious, he was not, you know, kidding around in any way. He said this, he meant it. That if in order to keep preaching in Eastern Europe, it's so important that you keep preaching in Eastern Europe, that's such an important service that you're doing, that if you have to, I mean, I'm not saying you should, but if you have to, then okay, eat meat. Wow. You see? So this is something to meditate on, because, you know, it's a good pastime, it's a good anecdote to meditate on, because it enables us to have the proper perspective of how the relative importance of things. Preaching is so important that Prabhupada was actually instructing Harikesh Maharaj to eat meat if he had to in order to continue doing that service. So, wow, that's a pretty, you know, big statement, right? And then, on another occasion, just to emphasize this point a little bit more of how important Prabhupada thought the preaching was, that Prabhupada was in New York City. This was his last visit to New York City, actually. It was 1976. And it was he came for the New York Ratha Yatra. That was the first Ratha Yatra in New York. That was an amazing event. Actually, devotees, you can watch video of that. There's video of that on Yadubara's video series. You can see the videos of the kirtans and all the devotees there. Devotees came from all over, hundreds. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, I was there. Archita, you were there? Where were you? Oh, my God. It's okay. Designing beautiful books like this, Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Part 1. So Krishna will forgive you, I'm sure. But, yeah, it was an amazing event, and, you know, lots and lots of devotees were there. Anyway, so Prabhupada was, as usual, just, you know, pushing himself like anything. And his next scheduled stop was London and then to Tehran, Persia. And so devotees noted that Prabhupada was like a bit sick. You know, he had like a cold or a flu or something like that. And he was kind of, you know, he was feeling it and they could see that. So after the whole thing was over, this was like a day or so before they were going to leave. Prabhupada was in the elevator with a group of sannyas disciples, sannyas leaders. And somebody suggested to him, I can't remember who, Prabhupada, you know, this was a great success and wonderful. Maybe you could take a little break now, just, you know, stay here for a few days and relax, rest a bit, you know. Try to recover your health a bit. Maybe they even suggested to him to go to Hawaii. I can't remember, you know. But they were suggesting to him to do something other than just kind of push on and go on to London and then to Tehran, you know. Gita Nagari. Okay, they wanted to go for a write in a few weeks in Gita Nagari. So then, you know, which is sensible. I mean, okay. You know, and then he resumed his normal program after he has a bit of a respite there. So, and they were, you know, saying it nicely. And then Prabhupada was in the elevator. And when Prabhupada heard this, and then Prabhupada's response was, he had his cane in his hand. And Prabhupada took his cane and he went, boom! He put it down on the ground and he went, he said, I want the right. He said, no, he said, I want, please give me the benediction that I can preach for Krishna. You know, like Bhishma Dev did, till the end. Something like, you know, those, I can't remember. I couldn't find the exact words on the Veda base because it wasn't recorded. But Archita Prabhu seems to remember that's... But certainly it was something like... It wasn't exactly that. It was just about that. Right? Was that... Benediction? Yeah, benediction that I can preach like Bhishma Dev right up till the end, something like that. So, you know, Prabhupada really thought this was of great, great importance. And, on another occasion. Is that time? Is that correct? Is that 10 past 8?
Yeah.
Wow, time flies when you're having fun. So anyway, so just to wrap it up. So the real thing is that, you know, Prabhupada wanted devotees to be actively engaged in Krishna consciousness. You know, it's okay to do this reduced eating and sleeping thing, but not at the expense of being actively engaged in devotional service. You see? Like there was one lecture Prabhupada gave in Vrindavan, about 1973, I think. I found it last night. I didn't get a chance to copy it out, where he was saying that he didn't want devotees to be like staying around the temple and chanting extra. Like that. He said, what are they... I'm sorry I didn't copy the whole thing out, you know. But he said, what will they do? They'll just be thinking of women and money. He said, better they go out, work hard, and distribute books. Those were his words, really. He said, I don't give this opportunity, you know, for devotees to, you know, sitting around and chanting like that, just hearing and chanting. I don't give this opportunity. And my Guru Maharaj, he also did not give this opportunity. You see? So that was Prabhupada's mood. You know, Prabhupada's mood, he didn't think that his, at least at that time, 1973, 4, 5, or 6, whenever that lecture was given, he didn't see his disciples as being advanced enough to do, you know, prolonged sessions of hearing and chanting. Rather, because he thought they would, as he said, what do? They'll just think about women and money. He thought it was much better that they go out, work hard, and at least, you know, and he said, on this occasion, he said, and distribute books. That was what he said. You see, so that was Prabhupada's mood. And, so, of course, I think, you know, we have to try to follow that. So I agreed with everything Naikatma said this morning except for that one thing. You know, when he said, you could go to the Sankirtan Festival, you could go down to Tijuana, or you could go out on the Harinam, or you could just stay in the temple and chant. No, don't stay in the temple and chant. I mean, chant your 16 rounds, but after you finish the 16 rounds, go out and preach. You know, chant 16 good rounds and then go out and preach. Don't stay in the temple and chant. I mean, if you can't, if you're really feeling that you need to, okay. That's not bad. I mean, it's not really bad, but, you know, better if you can go out and preach. And we should be enthused to go out and preach. And I was just thinking this morning. I was thinking about the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, part one. I'm getting on, time is not just about up, so I'm not going to elaborate upon this. But this, look at this book. It's so beautiful. I mean, really, how could anybody not be fired up to distribute this book? I mean, you can't see it. I'll just pass it out, then you could just pass it around so you refresh everybody's memory. It's got this beautiful picture that Prabhupada himself designed on the front cover. Shows the spiritual world. That's Goloka Vrindavan. Has Radha Krishna. And over on one side, there's Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and all the devotees. And on the other side, it's like Radha, Krishna, and the groves of Vrindavan. And then it shows the different Vaikuntha planets, the Brahma Jyoti, the Vaikuntha planets. There's, it shows that. It's everything. It's a full picture of reality. Right? And if you go just a couple pages in there, it explains the whole thing. There's a description, explanation of the cover. I mean, it's just like such an inspiring book to distribute. And even on the back, when it describes it, it's such a beautiful description. It says here, the Bhagavatam is the highest expressions of love of God. In these dark and confusing times, the Srimad Bhagavatam shines as brilliantly as the sun. So this is such a beautiful book. And, for devotees who are distributing it, the cost of this is $2.50. You mean to tell me we can't get $2.50 from somebody? It's like, really, we should be inspired to distribute these books. It's just such a nice thing, inspiring to be able to give people this. Anyway, pass that out there. Everybody can refresh their memories, have a look at this beautiful Bhagavatam. Cover was designed by Archita Prabhu, by the way. everything is really, well, Prabhupada ultimately, but he just touched it up. So anyway, I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, pass it around to the devotees. Archita Prabhu, yeah. No, I agree. But at the same time, right. But it doesn't mean that Prabhupada was, contradicting himself or presenting a double standard. His mood was, for me personally, I won't eat meat. I'll eat oats. I'll eat potatoes. For the rest of my life, and I'll stay here and preach. But I'm not expecting you to do that, because obviously there was some food. Harikesh could have eaten something, but he was saying, okay, I'm not expecting you to have to survive on oats and potatoes or something like that. If you have to, in order to be able to function to do your service as a last resort, if there's no other way you can manage, then preaching is so important you can eat it. But you're right, yeah.
Thank you.
Right. That's the real point. Yeah, the audience wouldn't think of that. Right. Well, yeah, thanks for that clarification. That's important. Right. Yeah, very good. That was a good clarification. Thank you. Others? Questions? Comments? Babu? Thank you. I was ready for that. I got an opinion. I mean, you know, since there's no, like, Shastric thing about it, my opinion is that I think Prabhupada... Hare Krishna. I think this is off now. Hare Krishna. Yep. Nope. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Yeah, is it on now? Okay. So I think Prabhupada would have thought this 24-hour kirtan thing was okay. Like in Mayapur, you know, devotees have been out preaching all year long. A lot of the devotees who come to Mayapur, you know, they're preaching all year round, and they're doing what the basic program of just doing the morning program and going out and preaching. So it's a once a year type of thing. You know, you go to Mayapur, there's thousands of devotees, and it's kind of really far out. You know, for one day or 2 days, everybody's there chanting. And in Mayapur, nobody's going out preaching anyway, so what are you doing if you're not there chanting? To be honest with you, a lot of the devotees don't spend all day reading the books. You know, it's kind of like, so it's a good way to engage the devotees in that type of situation, and I think that Prabhupada wouldn't have been against it, you know. It's not like, you know, but I don't think Prabhupada, it's this 24-hour kirtan thing is something Prabhupada would have encouraged here in the West. And once again, even then, it's not bad. It's chanting, you know. Maybe he would have encouraged it for people who are like congregational members who, you know, would, if they weren't here taking part in the 24-hour kirtan, would just be out back in their homes shopping or watching television or something like that. You know, it's like a hierarchy of things. It's better to be part of a 24-hour kirtan than it is to be doing something material, some material activity. But I think it's much better than being engaged in 24-hour kirtan is to be, if you have the opportunity, to be out actively trying to preach. I mean, my personal opinion, I'll even get something even more nitty-gritty. Even like here in the temples, you know, on the festival days and everything like that, when we have all these jugyas and this and that. Actually, in one, this, like, you know, I've got two minds about it. One mind is, I think it's a stroke of genius on the part of Rabindranath, because everybody's engaged. And I've seen, and I was here even before he started doing that, and I noticed that the guests would come, and when those things weren't going on, people would be standing around talking prajalpa, you know, doing this, that, and the other thing. So it's certainly better than that, you see? But I think better than that is just, like, round everybody up and go for a chanting party. You know, take a kirtan party down to the, you know, the movie theaters right around here, or, you know, down to Venice Beach or wherever. In other words, we should take advantage of every possible opportunity, especially when you got a group of devotees congregating together, to go out and preach, to try to give other people Krishna consciousness, you see? So that's my, I'm not trying to criticize it, because I think it's certainly better than standing around and talking prajalpa, you know, when we're doing this thing, Radharani Swaha, whatever, you know, it's better. But it's not as good as if, you know, we had a chanting party organized and take a chanting party someplace, or took a group of devotees out to distribute books someplace. You ask me, I'm telling you, that's my opinion. Archita, go ahead. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, thank you. Great comment. Thank you. Anybody else have anything? Okay, we'll stop. I'll take it after this. Thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.